Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about... Hold on, let me redo this. Welcome, adventurers. You've come a long way and your bones must be weary. Take a seat and humour me, Rubitha the Bog Witch. This is the tale of Dungeons and Dragons. It all started in the early 70s when two travelling bards known as Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson came together to brainstorm. Previously, Gygax had co-created a medieval miniature wargame known as Chainmail, and Arneson had used Chainmail to resolve combat in a tabletop wargame of his own. It was this informal crossover that then led to a formal collaboration called the Fantasy Game. You're never gonna guess what this ended up being. The world of Dungeons & Dragons is one inspired by many others. Gygax has named a wide variety of influences in the past, from the works of Robert E. Howard all the way to Michael Moorcock. What, are you waiting for a joke about his name? Not happening. Alright, fine. Moorcock? No thanks, I'm full. Hey, why are you booing me? Oh, whatever. We'd be remiss to not mention the most obvious influence, one that even sparked a threat of copyright action unless there were a few name changes here and there. For years, Gygax downplayed Dungeons & Dragons' connection to Tolkien's Lord of the Rings series, but the connections were clear. Halflings were hobbits, Balors were Balrogs, and elves were elves. Could it be any more Lord of the Rings? And as we know, the tales of Middle-earth have been beacons for fantasy fiction, and you could very well say the same about Dungeons & Dragons. When one thinks of a tabletop role-playing game, D&D is the one they usually think about. In the past, it was a virgin's pastime in a dank basement, but now, all the coolest guys are playing it. In the past few years, we've seen D&D content everywhere, in TV shows like Stranger Things, movies like Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, and even in video games like Baldur's Gate 3, the biggest game of 2023. So what sparked this shift in perception? Why is D&D so in right now? And what goes into making Dungeons & Dragons an experience that keeps people coming back? Joining me today to talk all about it is YouTuber, Dungeon Master for I Speak Giant, and my well-dressed friend, Zach Nahum.
Zach, how are you?
I'm doing fine and dandy. Thanks for having me
on. And dandy.
Fine and dandy.
You're a D&D boy.
I'm a D&D
lad. We know this. We've heard of this.
From way back.
And that's actually exactly what I was going to freaking ask.
That's wild.
Where did your relationship with Dungeons & Dragons start? How did you two meet?
How did we get along?
Yeah, what's the meet cute?
So it's funny because I'm like, I'm a D&D boy from way back. And then like, that is true. But then there's, because I've been playing for the last 9-ish years, I think. Mm. But then there's people that you meet that are like, oh yeah, I've been playing for 3 decades. And you're like, okay, well, that's a long time.
All right, hold on.
All right, all right. But yeah, like the meet cute.
Yeah.
I think it was this show that like had 2 seasons and then it stopped, I'm pretty sure. Maybe one. It was Dan Harmon's Adventure Time? No, not Adventure Time.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. It's the Dan Harmon one.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it's such a good idea. It was essentially like comedians playing around a table, but the DM would do all the roles for them because they didn't know how to play D&D. And then it was like interspersed with like animation, which was a really cool way of doing it and really, really funny. And I saw that and was just like drawn in entirely into what it could be, because it really got across both the fantasy and the improv and just like nature of the game without getting bogged down in like literally any of the numbers and whatever.
Yeah.
And that's what really got me hooked. And then it was Critical Role. I was a big Critical Role boy for a little while there. Watched or like obsessively like binged it and all that jazz. And then just desperately wanted to do it myself, because I realized it was like, the thing that really hooked me was like, this is finally an outlet for like all these things that I like doing that I don't get to do. Like how, like I'm, you know, in high school and stuff, I was like a big drama kid and like loved to write and English was my favorite subject, but then got a job, you know, used to work in like social media and stuff, which was like kind of got to do that, but not really. So it was such an outlet, a creative outlet. And I mean, to a captive audience, essentially your players.
Yeah.
And they get to like, it's very low stakes, but it's a way to express all that creativity with that you don't get to do in any other situation.
Yeah. Cause I feel it's this really interesting thing. No, I'm going to stop because I keep saying, I just find it really interesting. Or here's the interesting thing. It's like everything's so f***ing interesting, isn't it?
Well, that's why we're saying it. That's why you're saying it. That's why it's coming out of your mouth, Ruby.
Things are said because they are interesting. And that's definitely the case all the time. But like I think that's the special thing when it comes to Dungeons & Dragons. Because in video games, and I would know, and you would know, because we are 2 people that play them.
I've heard of them.
I think we're also both big fans of the theatrics, you know, just of life. You know, we're both performers.
Very dramatic bitches
we are. Very unserious people. But, you know, with video games, like you do have that interactivity. And then with the theatrics, you do have that performance. And then D&D, tabletop as a whole, but obviously D&D is probably the biggest one.
Yeah.
D&D really brings those two together in such a unique way.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
It really is, for the people who are getting into it or haven't heard about it, the way I always describe it is that it is a machine for creating silly jokes with your friends. And like all of the trappings of like the, you know, to hit bonus and your stats and your abilities and all that stuff, that is all just trappings in order to, they are cogs and gears that turn the wheel of a machine that has made me laugh the hardest in my entire life.
I am a big fan of roleplay. I think there are 2 types of people who play Dungeons & Dragons, or 3.
Mm.
Let's go three
because just for safety.
I feel like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons kind of works in 3s in a way. You've got your chaotics, your evils, and your neutral, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, you get some neutrals.
Yeah. And I feel like in those 3, chaotic to me is the person who loves the role play, who froths the role play. Evil is someone who froths the combat. And neutral is someone who likes both. I'm kidding. However, I feel like there's people who enjoy the 2 in harmony.
Yeah.
But then there are also people who have a preference for one or the other.
Yeah.
And I feel, for me personally, I'm very much a fan of the role play.
Yeah.
I like to really get into my character and, you know, see how they work and then put that out of my mouth.
Well, I think the people that like both end up becoming DMs. Oh, yeah. Like, you're like, I will have to make my own thing. Or at least, like, the people who have very strong opinions, I feel like, end up becoming DMs because they're like, well, I want a campaign exactly to run like this. And the only way you're going to get this is by running it yourself. So then you end up doing it. Like,
yeah.
And then you just end up, you just stay, like, the whole shtick of being, like, the forever DM. Because, like, now that you're in the role, you're in it forever, bud. Like,
yeah, you're so good at it. You can do it all the time. And you're like, oh, well, forever.
Okay, I guess so. But it's also, like, it's the way that you, like, especially if you're just out there, like, you're interested in it. And you're like, I would like to play, but I have no idea how. It's like, hey, you're the way how. Like, you become the DM, and then you rope your friends into it by being like, let's all hang out and just try this thing out. And then you got it. Yeah,
you're a DM.
Yes.
And I feel like it's great segue. Wah, wah, wee, wah. But you're clearly someone who enjoys both aspects of it. Hmm. At what point did you kind of realize that being a dungeon master was your calling?
I remember there was this one session before I started doing any, like, the recorded stuff and all of that. But it was a session with my friends. It was like the second time I'd ever DM'd. And there was this, we were running Mines of Phandelver, which is like the starter adventure that basically everyone does if they're getting into fifth edition. And there is this creature, I was like reading ahead about what they might do. And there's a creature in this dungeon that was a Nothic. And a Nothic is like able to essentially read the minds of the party and know a secret about them, like know what they keep most secret. So I like messaged them all individually asking them to give me like a secret from their character. And then as they were walking through this space, they kept having to make like saving throws and like they felt like there's a presence in their mind. And then it was time for them to confront this creature, which is like this horrible like humanoid creature with one big eye. It's like this creepy looking thing. And I just like hammed it up insanely. I had never done it, like, really, like, performed as a monster before, but I was, like, you know, scratching the walls, and I was, like, doing weird hisses, and I was, like, talking to them about their, like, their secrets and, like, giving them hints, and they were freaking out. Like, I came out of it, like, buzzing, being, like, I really, like, emotionally affected these people, and in a negative way.
I think I really ruined these people's lives.
I really freaked those people out. This is what I did.
This forever. I mean, that's a beautiful story. And how's it been for you?
It's been amazing. Like, it's really, like, when I said earlier, it's like, it is this, like, I feel like even if you're not into, like, the specific things that I'm into, which is, like, you know, a bit of improv, a bit of acting, a bit of, you know, story and role play and all that kind of things, DMing is what you put into it. So I know, like, plenty of DMs that get really into, like, encounter design and homebrewing monsters and map making and all that kind of thing. That's what they throw all their, you know, efforts into, and that can make for incredible campaigns. So yeah, like, it's been lovely to have this thing that's slowly become now my whole career. my day-to-day living is D&D now and tabletop in general, but like, I feel very, very lucky to be able to have a career where my job is to play make-believe and silly buggers.
Absolutely. And how did you get into that job, like making D&D content as you do?
So for ages, I was doing a D&D podcast, and that's still going, I Speak Giant. And that was just like, I hadn't talked to a friend in a while, and we had done a podcast in the past. Our whole friendship was kind of like making stuff together. And so I was like, hey man, you want to, like, I'm getting really into D&D. Do you want to do a D&D podcast? And he was like, sure. And then we did that that's been going for like 9 years.
Wow.
And yeah, about that, it feels like crazy long. And that was great. And we got so many lucky breaks. There was this, like, midway through, we were able to work with Wizards of the Coast themselves, and we did like a promotion doing the Descent into Avernus campaign, which was so much fun. It felt like we were like putting our big boots on, our big kid boots on.
Yeah.
Getting the call kind of thing.
We made it.
I remember a friend of mine talked about it. He was like, it's like your pickup basketball game got a call from the NBA. And I was like, yeah, it does feel really weird. And so it was, we did that for ages, and that was wonderful. And then I kind of just started making these, you know, I've always had like, and then throughout that entire time, I had like a your real human job on the side or as the main thing. And then I was always like doing this creative stuff on the side. And then I started to try and make YouTube content. And then somewhere between the fact that I had very limited time to make this like content and put it up, I tried out a bunch of skits and I tried out a bunch of different things. And the thing that stuck was me just reading out funny D&D stories that I found online. And then that took off. And then it was, it did really well. People responded to it. They were easy to make and easy to do while I had like all this like full-time jobs and stuff that I was kind of working around. And that's what I've kind of now, I just do that. It's like my whole thing.
And what do you think you have over someone who gets a video of Minecraft parkour and puts an AI voice over it reading a Reddit story?
I think I'm just like one, like half a step up from that. I really think it's...
I think I'm just like a little bit better.
Not a lot. Not a lot. But
just enough.
My entire ego lives in that space between Minecraft... parkour video and me. That's where it is.
We joke, we laugh, but there have been some sad nights where I've been lying in bed.
Look.
And I fall like the Minecraft man might if he makes the wrong jump. I fall.
Yeah.
And I listen to some of those and they're just like
some "Am I the Asshole" post from Reddit, and you're like, wow, they are.
Yeah, they really are the asshole. Or they're not. We'll find out.
Oof.
You've probably read a lot of stories of people's experiences with D&D. Are there any that kind of like stuck with you that you just remember because maybe they're so strange or maybe they're so funny or maybe they're so horrible? Any that stick out?
I think the ones that are stuck with me the most are the ones that are just like fairly innocuous, because people always tell that, like, I think there's a tendency whenever you meet someone who's also into D&D and they'll tell you some story about their campaign and they'll tell you like the big epic moments that happened of like defeating a big boss or whatever that is. And I think the things that always stick with me are like the very small character stories that someone will tell really well. It's always in the telling. And so there's this like really famous, I'm going to get the name wrong. I think it's Gronk or Gronk?
Oh, baby Gronk. Right.
Yeah, baby Gronk rizzed up.
Rizzed up Lizzie. Yeah. Libby. Shit.
yeah, that guy.
Oh, he's the Riz King.
The Riz King, the Rizzler.
Terrible.
It's the Grog. I think it's Grog, the orc.
Grog.
Something.
Okay.
It stuck with me, clearly. But it's the story of someone who's just like, it's really well told. It's about their orc and just their nature of this very strange character they created, who is like at equal points kind of stupid but like very cunning and kind of like intimidates everyone, like stealths through a room, but their intimidation is high enough that when everyone like sees them, they just scream at everyone not to see them. And so everyone just like
Don't look.
You don't see me. And it's like that kind of thing. Don't see me. And everyone's like, yeah, sure. It's fine.
Okay. And they just look away. I just realized like video is so not. Because I'm a physical comedian. You know what I mean?
Use my hands.
It's all about the visuals. And sometimes I will, you know, do a bit on a podcast and then like realize that nobody's going to see that shit. I turn my head around. Nobody's seeing that.
It's a funny visual gag. The perfect for audio formats.
It's perfect for it.
But all that short form. I feel like at some points I've felt like, oh, is this kind of like, is this content not highbrow enough or something? But it's kind of a bread and butter. If I was really up my own ass about it, I'd be like, you know, people have been telling other people's stories and like for ages. And that's kind of a thing that's happened, not just on short form video content, you know. And then it's also allowed me to do some really like cool stuff that I've really loved pouring my creative kind of heart into, which one of the videos on my channel, which I'm really proud of, is the D&D But Real, which I kind of did a D&D one shot, but I took out all the dice rolls and made them physical or mental challenges. So if someone had to shoot a bow and arrow, they had to I had a toy bow and arrow and a thing set up. I had, you know, for intelligence checks, I had like a Rubik's Cube that was like two moves from being done that they had to solve in like 10 seconds. It was really fun. It was a lot of work, and it really came together through like the incredible cast I had on there. Panda, yeah. Bones, Dale, Jordan, Omar, Najam, who just happened to be in Australia. He's like a dude that's been on Critical Role and Dimension 20 and yeah. stuff, that just happened to be in the country, which was super cool. Came together with the crew as well. That was lovely. But that's been one of my favorite things I've done, I think, for sure.
Do you think you're going to try and do it again?
Yes. Yes. I am going to do it again. And I'm going to try and do it bigger. More insanely. Yeah.
Got any ideas that you can share with the class?
Yeah. So like a bunch of the idea, one of the hardest things to do is the athletics checks. The ones based on strength, because I never wanted to give someone a check that they actually
physically can't do.
Or that might hurt someone. You know, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
So I have ideas for stuff that would be funny, but it would just take a really long setup time. And then it would have to kind of be filmed separately. So I would be able to, like, long and the short of it, I kind of want to get someone in armor and fight another armored knight. Like, I want to get someone fully in, like, battle-appropriate attire and have them fight someone with a sword, but both of them in full armor, so no one's gonna get hurt, but it would be sick as hell.
God, that'd rock.
Yeah.
And I think it can be done. And you know what, if everybody's in the same type of armor,
yeah,
then I don't think there are any issues. You know what I mean? Like, like you're both potentially at a disadvantage or an advantage, depending on how strong just your kind of general body is.
Yeah.
If you're putting on real, true armor.
Yeah, full plate armor. Like, you're not going to get hurt. It's going to rattle and be, you know, a surprise getting smacked with a sword.
Bonk.
But, you know, I want to kind of set up big things like that. Like, big obstacle courses, stuff like that.
It just sounds delightful.
Yeah.
It just sounds absolutely delightful.
Yeah, I'm very
excited.
And,
you know, you wouldn't be alone in wanting to kind of make big song and dances when it comes to the content of D&D. You know, you mentioned your love for Dan Harmon's D&D podcast, and that's what kind of got you into it. And there are so many other big ones, just like that we also mentioned, Critical Role, The Adventure Zone.
Yeah.
You know, they're huge. And how much do you think these kind of series have played a critical role in popularizing D&D even more?
Oh, massively. Like, I think especially Matt Mercer's style of D&D had such a massive impact on the whole market. Because it feels like prior to then, what D&D was, or any tabletop RPG, was this, like, you get in, it's a combat simulator in order for you to get from one room of the dungeon to the other room of the dungeon, and that's what it is. But after that point, people were like, oh, it can be like a vessel for a story and for role play, and like that can be the focus of it rather than the afterthought. And then it was just like, once that, you know, switch had been flipped, it was suddenly like, yeah, you get The Adventure Zone, you get Dimension 20, and you get all these things all pushing out. But I do feel like we're getting to the point where the amount of actual play D&D shows is kind of hitting its critical maximum kind of thing.
Yeah.
Its limit. Because, like, you know, Critical Role, if you watch Critical Role, Dimension 20, and The Adventure Zone, three of the more popular shows, there are plenty of out there. But if you just listen to them, that's like several hours per week.
My God, yeah.
Like, it's like,
yeah,
it's like almost a full working day per week just to listen to all that. To be up to date on any one of them is a massive time investment. So one of the things I was looking at when I was like trying to think of long form content was like, because I have a podcast that I've been doing for ages, and while it was popular, it was certainly like kind of neat in its own little niche. It was like, what is gonna like really pull people and hook people? What idea is gonna make it different rather than just be like, hey, I'm gonna do this, but now it's on video now.
There were people who got in early, and you could say the same thing about any piece of content creation.
Sure.
There were the people that got there early when it came to D&D content. Yeah. And that is your Dimension 20s and your Critical Roles and Adventure Zone and whatever Dan Harmon's is called. Harmon Quest.
Harmon Quest.
Oh, my
there
God.
There we go.
That took a million years. Yeah, okay. You've got those.
We're professionals.
We know what we're talking about. I think now it's you're not just getting people who are listening to your D&D podcast because they like D&D.
Yeah.
They're there for the people.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is a huge, huge part of it. Like, it's not just the story, as great as the stories are, it's not just the story. It's not just the audio quality. A big part of it is the people that are involved, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the people that are involved. And it's like, even if you were a very like popular group right now outside of D&D and you were going to make a long play D&D thing, you still do have to like, I think at this point you have to think of something additional to it because like, I mean, you know, I am guilty of this myself, of like listening to to Critical Role and being like, oh, I'll do that. And it's like, I'm never going to be good, as good at role play or improv as Matt Mercer, you know? But I can, you know, you put in your strengths and seeing what is really good about the way that you DM or you create stories or even you as a player, like how, what you bring to the table. And it's can be different, completely different. And I think if you are out there and you're thinking of doing some kind of D&D content online, you should think about like what your individual strengths are and what makes you unique and what kind of you bring to the table.
Totally, totally. And you know, it's not just, I mean, with podcasts, it's like so directly related. Like literally podcasts just playing D&D.
Yeah.
But I think D&D as well, at least in the past, I feel like it's obviously, it's been around since the 70s. So like D&D has existed for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But when it comes to its existence in media, I think it's been kind of there.
Yeah.
But not, it hasn't played a huge role in
well,
it's the things that it's presented in.
It's this, like I said, you know, like Critical Role and all these things were a big reason as to why D&D got popular. It's also fifth edition. So third edition was really big and had a lot of people in it, but it never hit that like it was big in its own bubble. And then fourth edition D&D is widely considered not very good. It took a very different direction. It tried to be a little bit like a more video gamey in many ways. It was like very kind of MMO-y, a lot of people like argued about. Like it had like it felt very much designed for a combat tabletop. It talked about like squares and like your daily powers and stuff like that. And people were kind of put off. And then fifth edition came out and it was already on the upswing when like Stranger Things mentioned it. And like, it was heavily based on it and Critical Role and stuff started on it. But fifth edition it was a very easy to show up and play. I mean, there are systems that are way easier to just kind of like jump in and play. But fifth edition specifically like took out a lot of the very verbose rules and explanations and tried to simplify things, kind of streamline them into a easy play experience. And I think that made the biggest effect on this. And then it was like, it was just timing. It was like, you know, MMOs had kind of fallen off. People were looking for like group fantasy activities to do, I think, together.
And you mentioned Stranger Things, and that's kind of the big one, you know, because I feel like when it came to representations of D&D in media, generally it's just like, oh, nerds play this. This is for losers. This is for virgins, and if you are not a virgin, stand up and leave the fucking table. And I feel like, obviously, with Stranger Things, when they did play it in the show,
they were nerds.
Call it Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, for sure. They straight up call it Dungeons and Dragons,
I feel like when it was, you know, when they were playing it, as you said, they were nerds, like straight up.
Yeah.
But the show still very much adapts from Dungeons and Dragons, with the Demogorgon and shit. Like it's still very much in its own way an adaptation, if not like, it is an adaptation.
Well,
it's like, also like,
so I think what Stranger Things does, like the Demogorgon in D&D is completely different from the monster in Stranger Things. Like they're very disparate elements. What I think is cool about it is that it kind of I love Stranger Things, and I love that the different stories, like the mum story is like a horror like movie that is happening to her, but the kid story is like a Dungeons and Dragons tale where it's like them as a group, they're facing different like challenges and they take it on together. They have interpersonal party conflicts and stuff. They're the Dungeons and Dragons group, not only because they actually play Dungeons and Dragons, but because that's what they are. They're a party. They're an adventuring group.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they got the best. Like that's what comes across best about it in terms of D&D.
Absolutely. And how do you think it kind of swayed public interest, but also public opinion on D&D?
Like you said, like they are nerds. They're definitely nerds, but they started as nerds and then they kind of ascended. Like they took us the journey from like they're nerds that play D&D, but hey, D&D is kind of cool because they ride on bikes and they save their friend from like a monster. So I think it was like this, like it's an interesting intro for the wider audience to kind of discover what D&D is, to start them out with like, you know what this is, f***ing nerds in a basement, you know, rolling dice and saying fireball.
I think it's cool as well that like in season, I think 3 was the most recent season, they kind of almost reflect the real life change in perception of D&D, where you had, it started with just the kids playing and like it was a dorky little thing that they did. But then in season 3, you've got like, The Hellfire Club also being really interested in D&D and role play. And I find it so fascinating. And on that note, do you think D&D kind of nowadays kind of works as this way to bring different kinds of people together rather than it just being quote unquote for nerds?
I think yeah, absolutely. I think probably the existence of the Hellfire Club in Stranger Things probably made thousands, if not tens of thousands, of D&D groups across the world. Yeah. Like, and especially like in high school, where I think like that is, I wish I had it in high school. Like I wish I had picked this hobby up then, because it's while you're kind of like, it's a perfect thing to kind of simulate social interactions and put yourself in someone else's shoes. And it kind of teaches you empathy and timing and like how to interact with other people while you're kind of still figuring that out as an actual human. And it's become so much more an inclusive thing than it was previously, I feel like, as well. Part of that is Wizards of the Coast kind of realizing a lot of the stuff in their canon is not okay.
Oh yeah.
pushing that out. There's still a lot of work there to do. But becoming more well known amongst a wider group of people, like I do love that it has become this like kind of championed by people of color and the LGBTQ community. Like it has become this thing that is for everyone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I mean, like, look, if you're going to be so heavily influenced by an author like Tolkien, there's a good chance that stuff in your game's not going to be super chill.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Maybe. Perhaps. But with D&D, and it is a tabletop game, and I feel like there's kind of been this divide between video games and tabletop games for as long as they've both been around. Tabletop obviously has been around a lot longer, but there's always been a bit of a divide because, you know, it's different. It's just plain simple, it's different.
It's different.
And the biggest game of last year was Baldur's Gate 3, which is obviously, as we know, built from D&D. It seemed like D&D seems like a game that should have had a good video game adaptation eons ago. It's been around since the 70s, you know, and people know it. There is such a common crossover between tabletop RPG fans and video game fans. So it seems like something that should have happened by now. But it kind of, say that it did with Baldur's Gate 2. Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah.
But Baldur's Gate 3 brought in people that have absolutely no interest in D&D. So why do you think it took so long for, in a way, it to be perfected in last year's game?
I mean, Larian definitely were the best people to do it. And I think it took so long because it's hard to do. Like, even when they started, like, the early alpha, like, beta test they put out was really janky. And it was really, like, there was a lot of stuff wrong with it. They tried to put their, like, environmental systems in. And it just wasn't working quite right. And it took them a lot of time. It just took them a lot of time and a very keen eye and a very, like, an environment seemingly that completely avoided, you know, doing things for the quickest profit. It took them attention to detail and, like, really, really good writers. And, like, we were talking about before about, like, inclusivity. Like I haven't played through Baldur's Gate 2, but I would bet everything I own that there is a lot more queer characters in Baldur's Gate 3 than in any of the other ones.
You are probably very right.
I think it's just one of those things that's like fantasy books very much influenced how tabletop role-playing games worked, and then tabletop very much influenced how video games worked, and then this new generation of like tabletop being popular again is influenced by video games. So I remember like Griffin McElroy, the guy who usually DMs for the Adventure Zone, talked about that, how he's like, oh, I made my campaign, the first campaign, very video gamey. Like, you had to go to these separate areas and get a quest, a magical item, and then we bring all the magical items together and it makes the emblem or whatever. And he's like, that's totally from video games. But he's like, those video games are totally based from RPGs, like tabletop RPGs. So he's like, it's kind of this like cyclical thing. So like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it all comes around, and like, the, you know, while there hasn't been a definitive D&D game before, it kind of, every RPG has a little bit of it in it, you know what I mean?
Totally. And I mean, like, we're at a point now where there are just so many tabletop RPGs.
Yes.
You know, they keep on coming, and there's a lot of homebrew stuff. I said that with homebrew. There's a lot of homebrew stuff, and there's a lot of homebrew stuff. There's a lot of people writing their own tabletop RPGs. There's a lot of people doing their own systems. There's a lot of people making their own systems, and we're at a point where you can start at D&D and kind of go anywhere else from there once you're exhausted. But D&D is still the biggest tabletop role-playing game of its kind.
Yeah.
What do you think it is that has kind of made it last?
Oh, I mean, like, I heard a really good thing. Matt Colville, who does incredible work. He also makes his a bunch of stuff and does YouTube and all that jazz. He said D&D is the lingua franca of tabletop RPGs. It's like the common ground, like English is, but English certainly isn't the best language. It's very janky. It barely does what it does. Like, it's 17 different languages in a trench coat. Very much the same with D&D, where it's like, it's this common ground. It does so many things badly, and so many other systems are even better for new people into the TTRPG setting. Like, if you're going to start trying to play a tabletop game, I wouldn't recommend D&D. I would probably go with something else. D&D is what you use because that's what people are interested in playing, because that's what's popular, because it's just kind of this, like, kind of thing that's kind of self-perpetuated itself. Why is it that way? I think it's just because, partly it's because they've been around probably the longest. They have the biggest company behind them. A bunch of different reasons. But, you know, we've talked specifically about D&D all this session. But, like, there are so many other tabletop games out there that are so great and really good at evoking very specific genres and tropes. Like, if you're into, like, you know, heists more than anything, there is definitely so many systems out for you. Blades in the Dark and Shadowrun and so many things. And then they're very silly little games. I remember I played in a game with Sarah Moore, who is like this fantastic game master who tries all these different, like, very indie games, where we played as the cat familiars of a coven of witches, like, fixing but also causing a lot of problems. It was delightful. So cute.
Oh my god. Oh, I love that.
It was really fun. And, like, there's so many, and it was just like, it was like an afternoon. We picked it up, the rules, in like an hour, not even, like 20 minutes probably. We kind of, like, fumbled our way through it, and it was so much fun. And so there's so many systems out there if you're wanting to get into tabletop, but, like, you see the player's handbook of D&D and you're like, that's a lot of information. You can go with a smaller bite.
Yeah. We've talked about the video games. We've talked about Dungeons and Dragons itself and the podcasts it exists within. I think it's an interesting conversation. Because isn't every f***ing conversation so interesting? But I get annoyed with myself. It's bad. I'm delightful.
It's interesting because you're saying it, Ruby.
Exactly. Interesting because I am saying it. But Dungeons and Dragons, it's all about interactivity. It's all about your role in it. That's what makes it, or the person you're listening to. Like, it's all about performance from you.
Yes.
Or from the person performing. So when it comes to movies, it's a little different. And with Dungeons and Dragons, there have been 4 movies over the years.
Yes.
The first one was Dungeons and Dragons in 2000. And that's
the Tom Hanks one?
That is the Jeremy Irons one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's that one. There's another one in 2005, where Jeremy Irons did not return. I don't know if his character died, maybe. Who knows? Is that a spoiler? Maybe. But there were a few in the noughties, and then in 2012, that just rated so poorly. And I think it's because they were trying to, you know, tell a Dungeons and Dragons story. But then in 2023... Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves came out.
Hell yeah.
And that was one that was got a lot more love.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say it's because it kind of felt like, it didn't feel like they were telling a Dungeons and Dragons story, but rather it felt like you were watching characters play Dungeons and Dragons. Have you seen it?
Yeah. I love that movie. I've seen it many, many times. And I think the other ones are like, because people like, I think people have the misconception about it as like, oh, it is like Lord of the Rings and blah, blah, blah. Because that's a lot of the cultural touchstones when someone is trying to describe what happens in D&D. It's like, oh, it's like Lord of the Rings, but we play the characters. But tonally, no campaign is going to be like Lord of the Rings.
Oh my god, no.
You might start out that way, but it's the classic meme of like, you start out as Lord of the Rings and you end up like Monty Python's like Search for the Holy Grail, right? It's that every campaign is very, because like I said, it's a machine for making silly jokes with your friends. It's so silly. And I think likely, I mean, I don't know how those other things got made, those movies got made, but I highly doubt that the people very involved in making the scripts or anything had ever played D&D but they're thinking of like, oh, it's a fantasy movie and this is the stories that are around it. This is the, you know, this, they have the whole Forgotten Realms and all like the things that are canon for Wizards of the Coast. And they just pull from that and make a fantasy movie out of it. But that doesn't capture the spirit of D&D. It's not why people like it. And I think because it wasn't as well known back then, the ideas of what D&D actually looks like when it's played weren't well known either. And so you got these movies that are just kind of like B-grade fantasy movies. Whereas now it's like the idea of what it looks like when people play is so much more well known, and probably more people have played it, and probably the writers have probably played in a campaign. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, it was directed by, or co-directed at least, by John Francis Daly, who is like a well-known dork.
Yeah. Like, absolutely. So they were able to get like the idea of it across so much better of what it's actually like to play at a table. And I think that's what was been missing the entire time.
Oh, totally.
I love that movie.
It's great. And it's a bummer because it actually, like, it didn't break even.
Really?
Yeah, it did not break even, which is so sad because, like, I thought it was fantastic. And you know what my thing is? I honestly think it was because obviously there was interest in D&D, but, like, with a D&D movie, I think people were kind of worried from those first three that they were like, oh, this is just going to be stinky.
Yeah.
If Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, and many people are saying this, but if that movie came out after Baldur's Gate 3 did, I think it would have done so much better.
It would have been crazy.
Timing is everything. And I think something that started to make people warm up to the idea of D&D not just being for dorks is the amount of celebrities that came out as D&D players.
Yeah.
Most notably, Joe Manganiello.
Yeah.
The big fucking boy himself.
Yeah. Large Big Dick Rick,
that fella, and Big Show from WWE.
Yeah.
Also in his team. And it's like, I think that was a
huge... Vin Diesel.
Oh my God, Vin Diesel. We talked a lot about Vin Diesel in our licensed games episode of Pocket Buds because he runs a game studio, and the Chronicles of Riddick game was amazing. But yeah, he's a super big D&D fan.
Yeah.
And I feel like people see celebrities doing anything and they're like, oh, I guess that's cool.
Yeah, I think that's what's a big twist in the shift in the kind of perception of it. It's like, it's part of this like big show, like Stranger Things, and then like slowly people like start talking about it, and you know, yeah, celebrities come out and be like, actually I played on it.
Yeah, we've got a secret D&D.
Yeah, when Joe, is it Manganiello?
I always say Manganiello, but okay. It might be
I think probably we can say it exactly how we like to. And he'd be okay with that.
Words aren't real.
Yeah. When he was like, yeah, I have this like secret D&D club, and like all these other celebrities come to it. I was like, what? It's going to be a while before it really shakes off that like it's for nerds thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe it never will. But I think it is definitely becoming more. And yeah, like if the movie had come out now, it would have done crazy.
It would have done numbers.
The other thing is that like, around the time, I'm not sure how much of this actually affected sales and whatnot, but Wizards of the Coast were definitely going through, I can't remember exactly what I think it might have been the issues around the OGL. People were like boycotting the movie and stuff like that. And like,
yeah.
Wizards of the Coast just keep putting their foot in it every time they open their mouths. Like, it's,
yeah,
they are not like, good at PR or making decisions.
Yeah. It's very possible that, you know, being part of Hasbro probably doesn't help either.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, I mean, acquisitions, we love them. they love to happen. So, womp womp. But, I mean, we talked about Critical Role and its critical role in kind of D&D discourse, I guess. You could call it that. And we also talked about different systems that are used in tabletop RPGs. Now, Critical Role have... I think just released their own
Daggerheart
RPG.
Yeah.
What do you know of it?
Daggerheart is similar to D&D. It is different in the fact in one very key way. I know I haven't dug super into the system, so I'm going to just talk from what I do know. They don't have actions per round.
Right.
So in Dungeons and Dragons, when it comes time to fight a thing, you roll for initiative and each person has their turn. And you have a limited amount of things that you can do in that turn. Daggerheart doesn't have that. It allows the players to kind of freeform, talk about what they want to do, and they can just keep doing a thing for as long as they want to do. I'm sure there are rules around it and roles around it and exactly what happens, but you can just essentially keep doing stuff for as long as you want to. I think it is trying to be a little bit more of a, you know, do what Critical Role does well, which is like the cinematic element of it and the trying to pull that kind of more epic story out of it rather than kind of like getting too bogged down in the details. That's essentially what I've gotten the impression of. A lot of people don't like it, but I feel like it takes a while for people to, I mean, like, look at Dungeons and Dragons. Like, people were playing it very differently from the first edition to how they're playing it now. A new system comes out. It's going to take a while for people to get a full understanding and scope of exactly how all this, like, things come together. And maybe they don't come together perfectly, but it still doesn't make, like, almost every system doesn't come together perfectly, and you can still make really great stuff out of it.
Totally. And you're doing something around Daggerheart.
Yeah,
soon, right?
So I'm going to be doing a one-shot in Australia. It'll be on April 10th. I'm very, very excited to play in this one shot with Persephoroth or Persephone. You might have seen her on stuff on Dimension 20. And Ify Wadiwe is going to be on it as well. I kind of don't really understand how I'm even in the ballpark near these people who I greatly,
oh,
greatly
don't
respect.
Don't sell yourself short. Don't do that. You're
I'm
fantastic. 5'9". And that's a normal height.
Thank you. Yes.
There's something really funny to me about calling a height normal.
It's a super normal. It's a super
and
normal
you are
height
at
to be.
A normal height.
So deeply normal.
So normal.
To be that high off the ground.
To be that big.
Yeah. So we're going to do a Daggerheart one shot, which Persephone is going to DM it. And she's going to do it in, it's going to be like a fantasy train heist. I'm super jazzed. Please come check that out. I think it's going to be morning-ish, around 10 a.m., I think. But yeah, I'll be retweeting all the details and stuff.
Yeah, slay. And have you got anything else you'd like to plug in the meantime?
My YouTube channel, Zach Speaks Giant. You can go there. You can see the one shot that I talked about where I replaced all the roles. If you don't know anything about D&D, it's a kind of a good way to get in because we don't pay a huge amount of attention to the rules. It's more just like kind of the vibe of D&D. And it's fun to watch people fail at physical challenges. So that's on my channel. It's on YouTube. It's free to view with your eyeballs.
Oh, love that.
Yeah.
Love when things are free. And my final question for you today. Is the D&D to LARPing pipeline real? And should we be worried?
I mean, it's coming around the corner. That's the next thing. When D&D starts to die off, people will be like, let's take it one step further. You can be in the fantasy now.
Yeah,
it's
I'll see
time.
You at St. Ives Medieval.
Oh, yeah, the medieval fair. That's going to be the next thing that gets, like, overrun with new people, right?
Absolutely. It's already getting there. I feel like it is already getting there. You know, one, it gives people a reason to go out west. And two, I think it's starting, like, it took a while after, D&D, but I think it's starting to shed that, like, image of this is just for nerds.
Yeah.
I think people are starting to realize that it's cool to buy a sword. And, it's cool to watch people joust.
Yeah. It's sports, man. It's sports.
It's sports.
But with big weapons that people hit each other with. And that's fun.
Exactly. And that is fun as hell. Zach, thank you so, so much for joining me on the show today. Thank you. Thank you.
It's been lovely. It's been lovely. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Back Pocket over on Patreon. If you support us at the silver tier and above, you can get access to our bonus episodes. In this week's bonus episode, Zach and I deep dive into our favorite characters that we've played in Dungeons & Dragons. Here's a sneak peek. Have you found yourself ever having a jazz moment, like getting into jazz?
Oh, like a little bit of scatting here and there,
cool.
Yeah, a little bit of,
Oh, I mean, I learned something new about you today.
And hey, if you really like what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. and on TikTok, where we're constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And then there's the socials, all our Twitter and threads and whatnot, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thanks so much for tuning in, and as Gary Gygax would say, bye!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.